everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, as well as their yearly writers conference, please go to pnwa.org. You know, every writer who writes a book, whether it's their first book or their 100th book, always learns something. But there is something in particular that we seem to learn writing our first book that actually gets published. There's always so much, I think, in a way, more learned for that book. And invariably, the writer will take what they learn to their next book. Well, today's guest, Randi Susan Meyer, certainly learned quite a bit writing The Murderer's Daughter, her first published novel. And she brought what she'd learned writing that book to her second novel to be published, The Comfort of Lies, due out in February. But in addition to learning about the craft of writing and storytelling, Randi also learned quite a bit about the business of being an author. And this knowledge she brought to a slim tome she has published along with, or co-written, along with MJ Rose, What to Do Before Your Book Launch, which is out now as we speak. And this is an excellent question, and one I cannot wait to have Randi answer for us. So let's get her on the show. Randi, welcome to Author.
Bill, thank you so much for having me here.
Well,
it's
my pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
What to Do Before Your Book Launch, huh? Did you feel stunned when your book came out, or did you have people about you to help you through that first process after you sold The Murderer's Daughter?
I was so stunned by how much I wasn't told that it was like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, after spending so much time reading, you know, how to write books and being in writers' groups and going to thousands of conferences, it felt like, on how to get published, it seems that once you then sell your book, nobody tells you what's going to happen between you and the publisher,
right.
You and online, everything. So it was an adventure, to say the least.
Yes, it's sort of like, you know, you put, there's so much effort and so much emotional energy poured into writing and submitting your work and dealing with agents and editors and all the rest, so that when you finally do sell that book, there's such a sort of, you know, exhalation that you've been almost saving up this breath for however many years it's taken you to at least write that. But no, your job in a way, has just, that was for part one, wasn't it? Just the writing of the book was, in a way, part one, certainly nowadays.
It is part one, but so many people, so many writers I found then and I find very much now believe that they're done.
Yeah.
That the publisher's going to take care of it now. Or, the publisher loves me so much, which,
right.
Let me tell you, is the first lie. They may
well,
love
they
you.
May love
they
you,
may
but,
love you.
But they also have a business to run. Whether they love you or not.
Yeah, they love you and many, many other people.
Right.
And love doesn't mean that they have this huge budget that they're going to put into you.
No.
That, in fact, the person that really, really needs to love you and look after you is yourself.
That's right. Oh, it's so true. And isn't that always true, Randi?
Yes, it is.
In all our lives.
Everything.
Yes,
yes, and it's no different. It's,
all right.
It's just,
so this is good timing, though, Randi, because it just found out that I'm probably going to have. So I published a book, I don't know, God, it was like 8 or 9 years ago, a novel. But so I've got a new book coming out. I'm going to have a book coming out relatively soon. And so it's been a little while, and I did nothing for that book, but I plan to do something for this book. So I have a little bit of a head start for compared to a lot of other writers, because I've got this show and my magazine and so on, but and my blog. But all that aside, so here I am. I've got a book coming out. Give me the three pieces of advice right off the bat you think I need to know about before this book actually hits the shelves.
The very first thing you need to do is probably the most prosaic, which is to something that my agent told me, which is to spend a little time every single day making up the best possible mailing list, both online and address that you can. Sit and think about every person you ever worked with in your life and white page them to get their address.
All right.
Think about everybody you ever slept with. Do the same with that.
Okay.
Think about...
All right, I'll make that list.
Think about everybody you went to camp with, went to school with, and then
every
send
single
out
human being whose name you know.
Every human being.
Yes.
And then send out a postcard, if possible, writing, you know, my book is out, it's available for pre-order, or you can invite them to things. People get really excited finding out that somebody they know. And when I did this with the Murder's Daughters, I was amazed at the people who wrote me back. It was a really great experience. That was number one, because my agent told me, and my agent's very wise, books are sold reader to reader.
That is absolutely
true.
That is absolutely
true. It really is.
Yeah. Almost, really,
so
more, you know, it's a weird thing, but when you think about all the various entertainment mediums, from film to music, books require that more. The audience drives it almost more than anyone else. We don't have a radio. We don't have TV. It's really person to person.
It really is. And book club to book club.
Yeah.
And then what's amazing from that list is that you find out that, and the first probably 10 book clubs I did were all friends and relatives who knew somebody who had a book club.
Right.
And then it kind of, it's very exponential.
Right. Then
so
somebody
that would be
knows
my...
somebody and they recommend.
Exactly. So that
would be. All
right.
So I got to make a list. So my first thing that I got to do is everybody, all right, everyone listening, if you know me, I'm sorry, but you're going to get a card from me. Just prepare yourselves. Okay.
And,
so that's the
and
first
prepare
thing.
Yourself, Bill. Prepare yourself to spend a lot of boring hours doing this task.
Okay. Well, I'll do it.
With the white pages online, okay?
All right. All right. Okay. So that's the first thing I got to do. What's the next thing I got to do?
The second thing I think that you need to do is educate yourself in how to be interesting in social media.
I'm so boring.
I can tell that already. I mean,
I've got to be interesting in social media. Okay. Describe
the way to do. The way I think to do that, because this is always, is to find out what you're good at.
Okay.
If what you're good at is screaming, buy me, buy me, buy me, then take yourself off social media.
I agree. Oh, my God, I agree.
There are so many people for whom I didn't buy the book, because if I saw their name once more. So for every one time that you talk about yourself, have at least 10 times that you talk about something else and figure out what it is. I spent an enormous amount of time before my book came out going to as many writers' blogs and now it would be Facebook posts, et cetera, to see what I find engaging and interesting.
Right, yes. I want just to step in quickly and say that you are so right, and I agree 100%. And in fact, when I do these interviews, you know, I do video and audio interviews, and a lot of times the writers want to talk about their books, and I totally understand that. But what is interesting is a writer talking about, say, if you were to try and describe The Comfort of Lies, you would probably be able to do a good job of describing it. But for a book like that, which is due out in February, by the way, everyone, February for The Comfort of Lies, you are a better salesman than trying to describe the book. In other words, if I can do an interview with you and make and have an interesting conversation with you and show how interesting you are and let you become interested and speak about the things you're interested in, that will almost be more compelling than you trying to describe how interesting the book is once people read it. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Exactly. Like, you have to show your passion. Find out. And so when I went to writers' sites and I saw those that bored me out of my mind, I took note of why I was – when did my mind turn off? So I did a lot of research about what was engaging and what wasn't. And then I tried to figure out what could I possibly be engaging about. I took that very seriously. What can I write about that might be interesting? And I realized, people are always coming. So to start out, I realized people always come to me for book recommendations since I was very young. My mother would walk in the house, you know, as an adult and say, what do you have for me? And so I started by just writing about books I love, not about me, but why these books engage me. There aren't reviews.
Yes. You're so smart.
So I wrote
Andy.
about other people.
Yes.
Excuse me?
You're so smart. That's exactly right. Why would people want to come to your website? Just to have you tell them when your book is coming out and where you're going to be talking? No. You've got to give them something that's interesting in and of itself, just for itself, right?
And they owe you nothing. You owe
that's
them
right.
a lot.
That's right.
You're in a I believe there's a covenant between the writer and the reader. And to keep that covenant, you better deliver. The only thing that they owe you is giving you is maybe giving you like a page, a shot at,
right.
at reading one page.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when people say to me, "Well, my book is interesting in chapter 10,"
it's not. No one's going to get there.
Why am I going to stay with you through those 10
right.
chapters?
Yeah.
What do I owe you? I mean, so I really believe that, you know, so that would be my second thing is to
okay.
find out what you can be passionate about, or if you're funny, what you can be funny about. I give it as an example in What to Do Before Your Book Launches, Julie Clam. I discovered Julie through Facebook and Twitter. I didn't know her at all. The book that she wrote are mainly about dogs. I don't really care about dogs. I really don't. But because her voice was so funny and so self-deprecating online, I ended up buying and loving her books about rescuing dogs. And they were great books. They had her voice.
Yeah.
She
yeah.
convinced me of her voice online.
Yeah.
And so you can go either way. You can convince people or you can turn them off.
Yeah, that's a great one. Okay, so that's number two. So I go be interesting online, find what's interesting to me and share it and be passionate about it and give it. I always think of giving it away. Give away what you love and you're interested in and people that is to me an invitation to come back. When you give away what you love, let them see it, let them have it, and then they'll come back for more. So all right, great. So that's number two. What's number three?
And number three is see how much money you can give towards it because it's a business.
Right.
And
okay, so you're willing to put out a little
dough. If you're poor as a church mouse and you can't do anything, then figure out what sweat equity you can give towards it.
All right.
Because you have to invest something, whether it be printing up bookmarks or hiring a publicist or hiring someone to do marketing. You have to market. People cannot buy a book they've never heard of.
Yes, and so you think, what's the best, you know, it's hard to say I know, but in terms of a financial investment, like I already have my website, for instance, but if beyond creating a website, what do you think is a really good investment of some money if I was going to spend money on something? Would it be hiring a separate publicist? What would it be?
I think that's probably an individual, and I'm not trying to avoid it, but I think that's an individual question for each person. For instance, if your book has a tremendous hook, like say you've written about the fact that you're going to reveal that you actually are having an affair with Michelle Obama, well, then you have a pretty big hook.
Right.
So you probably might want to get, and if you feel that your publisher is not going to get you any publicity, maybe you should think about, can you get a publicist?
Right.
And can you hire one? And can you also get references for them? Because there are some very bad ones out there.
Yeah, yeah.
If you think that you're going to have maybe, you have, for whatever reason, you're persuaded you're going to have a ton of really good reviews, maybe you should put some money in marketing and synergize those reviews. I have dear friends who've gotten great reviews in Oprah and New York Times and blah, blah,
right.
blah, who thought they were done and could sit back and who really
right.
sold nothing. Because not if you have people, if they don't read that, if they don't know about it, if there's not a pull quote you've used in some sort of ads. I was really surprised that's how I met MJ, is I did AuthorBuzz, the marketing.
Uh-huh.
And I was really surprised at the places where she advertised my book with blog ads, places I never would have known about because I'm not a marketer and I'm not an advertising
right.
executive, and she used to work in advertising.
Right.
And through those ads, in strange places, I sold an awful lot of books in places I wouldn't have even known because
right.
she took those reviews and she synergized them.
Wow.
So put some money towards yourself.
That's just awesome. You know, one of the things I like to say to writers when you talk about the marketing end of it is, and I do think this is true, is that hopefully you've written a book that you love, right? I mean, you've written a book that you want to share with people and that you're connected to, on a really emotional, personal level. You want to share this book. And I know that marketing for a lot of writers can be very intimidating, and it can seem sort of contrary to what they are and what writing is, which is such a quiet, solitary endeavor. But I really think that if you can connect to the part of you that loves that book and connect to that part of you that believes in sharing it because it's worth sharing and you've created something that is valuable and you want to share with the rest of the world, and that can guide you and help you through what can, for a lot of writers, can be, not for you maybe and probably not for MJ Rose, but for a lot of writers, that's very tricky terrain, to going out and sort of, it feels like they're selling themselves. But really, you're trying to share something you love. That's what
actually,
you're really
doing. Actually, that's
feeling.
The reason I, that's why, I, actually, Bill, that's the reason I did so much research on how to do this, because I so dreaded it.
Yes.
I can,
oh,
once
you,
I get on the
so
phone
you're
with.
Oh, regretting it.
I was
in.
Dreading it. And what, like, for instance, once I get on the phone with you, like I did right now,
right.
I'm fine. But the lead up can be awful.
Oh,
you know, I mean, the first time I ever went out to read aloud, well, let's put it this way. I figured out how to titrate my dose of Xanax.
Oh, God.
I figured if I, this is the truth, I figured if I took it at noon, I'd be okay by 7 p.m.,
God.
I'd be just enough to be alert and relaxed, but not enough to be sleepy because I was so, like, terrified. For me, the way I get over my terror, personally, is by planning and, like, I practiced my reading. That's another thing I would tell people to do. Practice, 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 practice. Because when you get out there in front of people, it is your job not to go, oh, I really hate reading.
Well,
what do they care?
Then
it's your mother.
This is
you
theater,
get out there
baby.
And you play it. Excuse me?
Theater. It's
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's a great book called Naked at the Podium, which really helped me. Which is, a lot of people don't know about that book, but boy, does it help. It's how authors should be when they're out there reading.
Yeah, it's really true. You know, I feel for authors. I see them. And, you know, I come from a theater. I did theater for a while, so I certainly get nervous before I speak and so on, but I seem to have a personality compelled to get up in front of people and, you know, be that person. That's, you know, here I am doing the show.
Yeah.
But I still get nervous beforehand, and I see some authors, and I listen to them read, and it's just not working, and it's because they're withholding themselves, and they feel, I can tell how uncomfortable they are, and they really need some help, they need some guidance, but where the author, this none, no part of being an author is this, is train, is there any training for being up there at the podium? It's just that there's separate skill sets entirely.
Which is why I suggest to people that it's your responsibility, because you're not going to get it. Whining is fun, and I certainly indulge in my share. But I do, you know, it's fun to do. But when it comes to getting the job done, I need to find a way to get it done. So, for instance, my husband, who's a great nag, so I use that. He nagged me to, he said, you have to keep reading and reading and reading until you're really sick of the sound of your own voice. And he was right.
Practice reading and reading, practicing the reading, you mean?
Practicing the reading, making it as good as I could possibly make it.
Yeah.
I mean, he said the first time I read aloud to him, he thought he would have to go on stage for me because it was really awful.
Oh. So you were really starting at oh boy, okay.
So you really have to start at, I mean, I really believe you have to plan it like, you know, these are the skill sets that you're going to need. How can you get as much as possible? It's really not that hard to sit and read over and over. I took my reading, I put it, you know, I took it, my manuscript from Word. I used a different font for every character. I mean, I really found tricks to make it that I could then deliver something that people would enjoy because I should preface this. The number four thing that people should do?
Yeah.
You don't have to do this book because you know how to do it, but if it's a first novel or first any book and you're going to go out reading, go to as many readings as you can. Sit there looking really interested and take notes about what they're doing wrong and what's turning you off.
Yeah.
And learn from that. Or if it's going well, write down why they're engaging you.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time going to readings, and I saw the best of and the worst of.
Yeah, it's really true. It was Joan Frank, who's a short story writer and novelist and essayist, and I've had her on the show a couple times, and she's a lovely writer, and she was the one who really, and I've always felt this, because I did theater, I feel like if people are all sitting down quiet looking at me, I owe them a show. I owe them a theatrical, tight, engaged, fully present performance, you know, and that's what I owe them, because they're being generous with their attention to me. And I understand for some people that's just, Jerry Seinfeld has a very funny joke where he talks about that people's number one fear is speaking in public and their number two fear is death. He said, so that means at a funeral, most people would rather be in the casket than the one delivering the eulogy. But it's true. I mean, the public shame is so powerful to us. You know, the nakedness of public shame is, you know, the ego thinks it's going to just die up there. That it terrifies a lot of people. And
it is, so much of it is terrifying.
Oh, absolutely. But I don't want to talk all our listeners out of doing it. It can also be fantastic, can't it? Because isn't it lovely to hear from strangers who have read your book, have picked it up all on their own without you asking them to, and have read it and been moved by it all on their own, and then they come to you and they remind you that you have reached another human being and you have somehow touched them and you never met them, and yet it happened. I mean, if that's not one of the most lovely aspects of this job, I don't know what is.
It's actually phenomenal. I feel so lucky, so lucky. I'm able to do it full time now. I'm not working with batteries anymore. That's a blessing. It's a fantastic thing. There are parts that are wine-worthy, W-H-I-N-E.
Yes.
But it's really the best job I've ever had in my life, and it is simply astounding to do it, and I'm very, very happy. And I love, actually, the work that I do towards all of this, I love all the work. I mean, I love getting up and getting to work. My husband's biggest complaint is that I need to put the computer down. I need to stop working.
Right. Well, what a good...
So, yes,
now,
it is worth it.
I know that before you started, you were a full-time professional writer. You worked with women who were in battered shelters or just with women who had been battered? I know that...
Oh, neither. I worked with the men.
With the men? With the men.
I worked with men who were caught, who had been
ordered
through probation in the court. Yeah, and before that, I worked for the city running, you know, children's programs, you know, worked with gangs. So this is fantastic.
But even that was work, obviously it was very challenging in different ways, but obviously that was not work that you were doing just some kind of slap work you were doing to make a living. You were used to doing work at least that you were connected to, although obviously probably very emotionally challenging stuff.
Oh, yeah. I've always told my children who are grown now, ad nauseum, get work that you love because you'll spend more time working than you will with your, you know, husband probably.
Right.
Work is where you spend most of your hours. And if you don't love what you do, you're going to be miserable no matter what.
It is so true, you know, because if you spend 50 hours a week doing something, that's 50 hours a week. That is so much time that if you don't actually enjoy the actual activity of it, what are you ransoming, you know,
I feel so blessed to love what I'm doing. But I also think you can find ways to, if you can't find some, even when I was bartending, I found there were parts of it I adored. I learned a lot from it. Because I had two jobs at that point, so I was doing bartending at night, and I found a lot to learn from that. Boy, I'll tell you.
Sure. Oh yes, I was in the restaurant business for almost 20 years, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Some was pretty rugged, but there was a lot I learned from it. In the end, I saw how much I actually did learn from it, and it's there. But one of the best advices I heard was from Eckhart Tolle, actually, about people who are in work they don't love. He said, you know, show up for the job you don't love completely. Let yourself, don't hide from it. Be there completely so that you can do that job as best you can and with as much intention and as much love as you can. And oddly, that will help you out of that work if it's not what you're meant to do, more than hating it and hating it and hating it. And I certainly found that to be true for myself.
I should have used that advice when I was working at Blimpie's in New York, making when I was 17, because I'll tell you, I did not bring myself there.
No. Well, it's so common. You know, it's funny, you talk about how much you love your work, and I always think about that great quote of Ray Bradbury, who said he's not a fantasy writer or a science fiction writer. He says, I'm a teacher, and I teach people to do what they love. I teach them to love life through my fiction. That's what he considers.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And I think it's really true. There's a lot of writers. It's kind of what we do. If you know what, at least for me, I would love to share a story that reminds people why life is valuable, why love is valuable, and why life is ultimately worth living and worth investing in. What could be better than that?
That is really interesting. I think with me, and my stories tend to be pretty dark, but I think
darkness is necessary.
What I hope I provide, though, is that, quote, me too, unquote, because I don't like books that don't go deep enough in terms of showing the underside, because I think when people know that other people feel those ways, it gives such a sense of ease and happiness to know you're not alone.
Absolutely.
And that you can move through, and you can move through it.
Exactly. You know, if you're going, you know, like, if you're going to write about why life is valuable, it is inevitable that you show what you describe as the dark side, because the reason you need to remind people that life is valuable is they do go into that darkness from whence it seems that nothing has any meaning, where it is all suffering and all struggle. And you can never help reach that person unless you reveal to them that you understand what that suffering is, because they will never want to follow you out of that hole if they don't think you've ever been there yourself, because how could you know your way out?
Plus which, there have been studies, I don't know if you've read them, not that I can quote them, but I have read them, that reading fiction, dark fiction, unhappy fiction,
uh-huh,
devastation fiction,
yeah,
really helps people be less depressed.
Interesting. I have
on
not
a number
that.
Of, yes, and I found that fascinating. Of course, could I find this study? And one of the reasons being is that you feel you're not alone. Another thing is that you feel, wow, could be worse. There's a feeling, maybe it's a certain kind of schadenfreude of like, I think my life is bad. Look at this. Also, there's that feeling of just being, I don't know, I'm a huge fiction reader. So
right.
There's that feeling of just being lost in other people's heads. So I think about this, like my husband and I get addicted to certain TV shows like Breaking Bad and, you know, blah,
right,
blah, blah. But I like to analyze as I'm watching and thinking, why do I identify with this character and even though he's evil but not this one and blah, blah, blah. But I know one thing, I never disappear into a TV show in the same way I do into a book.
You know why that is, Randy? Because when we read, we have to create what the writer cannot. And so reading is a more creative act than watching TV. And
yep,
that's why you disappear,
yep,
into it.
They become, you become, you're inside that in a total way. Yeah.
Well, what a perfect note on which to end the show. Randy, thank you so much. And good luck with The Comfort of Lies. I'm sure it's going to do fabulously well.
Thank you, Bill. And make sure to send me a postcard.
You'll be getting one. Don't you worry. Thanks again. Well, wasn't that fantastic advice, everyone? See that? Free advice. And now you know what to do when your next book is coming out. You can do those three things. You can also pick up What to Do Before Your Book Launch. I highly recommend it. That's it for now. As always, remember to do what you love, read what you love, write what you love. Well, if you do all those things, you really can't go wrong, can you? All right, everyone. Take care.